Hercules takes place in the city of Trachis in ancient Greece. The hero doesn't enter for a while. The character we spend more time with is the piece's real protagonist, Hercules' wife, Dejanira. She's Deianira in the mythology books, but in the opera, she's D-E-J-A-N-I-R-A. That's Dejanira. When she first appears, she's being observed by her herald and servant, Lycus. He knows that she's miserable day and night. It's her uncertainty about her husband's fate that's upsetting her so much. He's away in battle. She doesn't know whether he's alive or dead. Lycus sings the dignified opening aria, and in it he hopes that the king of the gods, Jupiter, a.k.a. Jove, will keep Hercules safe. Like most of Lycus's music, this is very contained in its vocal line, but it doesn't lack energy. It's just somewhat quieter in character than what we'll hear most of the time from the other principals. We'll be listening to Lycus sung by a countertenor or male alto, the remarkable David Daniels. The first Lycus was actually a contralto and one of Handel's favorite singers, Susanna Kibber. 3 years before, she'd premiered the alto solos in his Messiah. Dejanira rouses herself, but this is only to wonder why Hercules isn't with her. She realizes that this kind of pain belongs only to those who truly love. She knows she does, and she believes her husband loves her. In her aria, she makes clear that Hercules is the dear light that warmed her heart and cheered her sight. For Dejanira, this is pretty restrained. She'll have plenty of opportunities later for vocal flamboyance. Dramatically, it wouldn't be appropriate here. Lycus attempts to comfort Dejanira, but it doesn't help. He never will return, she snaps at him. Hyllus, her son, appears. That's H-Y-L-L-U-S. Well, he's just as concerned about Hercules' absence as his mother is. At his request, the local priests had made a sacrifice, which they thought would help to understand what the gods' wish for Hercules actually was. Well, suddenly the walls of the temple seemed to be on fire. The priests told Hyllus that this was a sign. He now repeats what the oracle said. I feel the god. He swells my breast. The oracle seemed to see the dead Hercules and flames rising from Itaea, an enemy region of Trachis. Hyllus recalls this in his first aria. Listen to the dotted rhythm here, which helps to create a more aggressive, imposing sort of expressiveness in keeping with the description of the scene.
Before my eyes, the future stands confessed.
First Hillis was the tenor, John Beard. He must have been an extraordinarily powerful singer and interpreter. The title roles of Samson, Jephthah, and Judas Maccabeus are all mature, heroic figures, and they all require truly formidable expressive depth. John Beard created all of them for Handel. So Dejanira feels this is really the end. She anticipates her own death and envisions joining Hercules in paradise, that is, Elysium, in the underworld. She imagines being serenely united with her husband, there in myrtle shades reclined. We frequently find this kind of inward-looking intimacy in Hercules. There's very minimal accompaniment, just organ and cello, and it leaves the voice incredibly exposed, with a singer needing just a thread of sound. A lot of Dejanira's role is full of wild, outsized emotions, so here's a wonderful contrast. The first Dejanira, with a somewhat improbable name of Anastasia Robinson, became a contralto after establishing an impressive reputation in soprano repertoire. Like her colleagues in Hercules, she had a long association with Handel. They'd been working together for 3 decades. She premiered 6 roles by Handel, but they were supporting ones. So we can imagine that creating Dejanira must have been a very big deal for her. Hillis begs his mother to stay hopeful. The next morning, he'll be setting off on his travels to track his father down and restore him to Dejanira. He'll accomplish that or die in his search. His aria describes the extremes of what he might encounter, from the icy northern streams to the burning Libyan sands. He'll be bold, since honor, love, and duty are guiding him. Listen to how vigorous, how active this vocal line is. There's a strong rhythmic underpinning to the aria in keeping with Hillis's confidence at this moment.
Where congealed the northern streams, bounding in icy vapors high. Where congealed the northern streams, bounding in icy vapors high. Where the sun's intense beams scorch the burning Libyan sand, by honor, love, and duty led, with adventurous steps I tread. With adventurous steps I tread, I tread. Where congealed the northern streams, bound in icy vapors stand, by honor, love, and duty led, with adventurous steps I tread.
The people of Trachis recognize the love Hillis feels for his father. Go, they tell him, and prove your virtue. This starts in a very dignified manner, but then in the section beginning Immortal Fame Attends Thee, the music livens up. Everyone wants to be as positive and encouraging as possible in sending Hillis off. Lycus suddenly rushes in with big news. Hercules is alive. He's returning as a conqueror from Oechalia, the city he sacked and leveled to the ground. Dejanira, of course, is overwhelmed. Just as the clouds fall away from the morning sun, her fears will end and joy will lift her soul. Now the singer has her first chance to show real virtuosity in Handelian coloratura, which should emerge here as if lighter than air. The whole aria has a giddy, almost girlish excitement, unlike anything else in the role. Lycus reveals that Hercules has brought some Oechalian captives with him, including Princess Iole. Hillis adds that he was so moved in seeing her, he'd felt like releasing her from her chains. Lycus reminds him about Iole's father, King Eurytus. He was killed by Hercules in combat. Dejanira doesn't want to hear about Iole or anything else. She bids both Lycus and Hillis to go await Hercules' arrival. Lycus pauses to reflect on how quickly grief can turn to joy again. So he, too, has a chance to lighten up in his expression in a bouncy, buoyant aria typical of a joyful moment like this in Handel oratorios. The people of Trachis again appear, proclaiming that Hercules' safe return has saved them from an unfortunate fate. This is the most exhilarating chorus in the whole piece, and it's disaster if the singers handle it too heavily. Everyone really needs to give it the lightest touch, but without making it sound frivolous. So let's hear the end of Lycus's aria, which leads directly into the chorus. On a square before Hercules' house, Iole is led in, along with some other maidens from Oechalia. She's miserable that they're captives, too. She feels as if her fate has dragged them down with her. It's clear to her that captivity makes no distinctions between people. Finally, the moment everyone's been waiting for, Hercules arrives at home. He enters to one of the most magnificent marches ever composed by Handel, whether in his operas, oratorios, or purely orchestral works. Hercules is the son of Jupiter, and it's Jupiter whom he now thanks, offering up a prayer to him and the other gods for bringing him home safely. He's also very relieved that the goddess Juno, Jupiter's wife, is calm once again. Why should he be thinking about Juno? Well, if you're up on your mythology, you know about Hercules' 12 labors. Juno was indirectly responsible for them. She was always jealous of Jupiter's extracurricular ladies, who included Hercules' mother, Alcmena, the princess of Mycenae. Juno was never, ever kind to any child Jupiter had with anyone else, and she had it in for Hercules from the beginning. At a moment when Juno had driven him temporarily mad, he actually killed the children from his first marriage. Once he came to his senses, he was, of course, appalled. He asked the god Apollo's oracle for advice and was told that his punishment would be to serve Eurystheus, the king of Tiryns and Mycenae, for 12 years. That service included the 12 labors, everything from slaying the dreaded Nemean lion to capturing Cerberus, the guardian dog of the underworld. It's because of the labors that we recognize Hercules by some distance as the mightiest hero in Greek mythology. But now the labors are over. And of course, that's reason enough for Hercules to rejoice. He views the conquest of Oechalia as the peak of his glory. But then he looks at Iole and tells her not to cry. She can now be as free as she was at home. But Iole can think only of her dead father, her friends, and the country she's left behind. This brings us to her very moving aria. It begins with her bursting out with the words, "My father!" She has a vision of Hercules' sword killing Eurytus. Dying, he bites the crimson ground. What a painful, unnerving image that is, and how powerfully it emerges through the jagged vocal line and wildly varied harmony. Handel never wrote anything more intense for a soprano, and he accomplishes it with no grand vocal gestures at all. Because I find this aria so remarkable, I want to give you a longer-than-usual excerpt.
Thank you.
Ioli's mood changes midway in the aria. Suddenly she turns almost eerily calm as she expresses a particular hope for her father and for herself that he'll find rest and that every virtue he stood for will remain forever in her mind. It's truly heart-stoppingly beautiful, as if the soprano were etching the lines in the cleanest, purest marble. The keynote is simplicity, and through it comes the daughter's profound love for the father. The first Ioli must have been amazingly versatile. She was Elizabeth Duparc, a.k.a. La Francesina, or the Little French Woman. She made her career in London and earned fame for stupendous vocal agility. Handel exploited that in Semele, in which she created the incredibly florid title role. But in Hercules, there she was in music that was, by comparison, almost austere in character, and playing a noble figure who couldn't have been more different from sparkly, bubbly Semele. Hercules hopes that, for him, battle will be a thing of the past. He's going to mellow out, so to speak. He proclaims that Dejanira's love will be the governing power in his life. He thinks of Ares, god of war, who's abandoned the bloody field. Hercules now needs neither spear nor shield, because he's found love through the intervention of Cytherea, the goddess better known as Aphrodite, or Venus, the goddess of love. So here's Hercules singing Handel's idea of how a macho man would sing coloratura. Yes, he's a bass baritone, but never once here can his music turn lugubrious. It needs to keep its forward motion and its basic lightness.
Quits the bloody field, and useless hang between spear and shield. The god of battle quits the bloody field, and useless hang between spear and shield. The god of battle quits the bloody field, the god of battle quits the bloody field, and useless. And useless, and useless hangs me. The green spear and shield, and useless hang the spear and shield.
Handel brought singers to London from all over Europe, the first Hercules being a typical example. He was the bass Henry Theodor Reinhold, originally German like Handel, and like La Francesina, he worked mainly in London, where he was much liked as both person and artist. He created a great many roles for Handel. Act I ends with the chorus of the people of Trachis declaring that the day should be crowned with festal pomp and that the young people should dance to music that will proclaim their joy. Listen to the accompaniment, which so lends itself to dancing.